Friday morning and time for this edition of The Week in Review. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in this week for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network. It's 7 minutes after the hour on Friday, June 29th. There's a lot to talk about, as always, but the Supreme Court's decision on healthcare will be our top story of the day. You can join in with your topic ideas from the news this week at 800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. Two guests with two perspectives this hour. We have John Smart, past chair of the Price County Democratic Party, regular contributor to FightingBob.com. He joins us by phone. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Good morning. How are things down there?
Not too bad. A little steamy. Warm up there in Park Falls?
Not as warm as you are, I think.
And then here in the studio, David Blaska, former Dane County Supervisor. His Bring It blog is at the In Business Wisconsin website, and we have that linked on our program notes. David, good morning.
Good morning, Rob. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with that Supreme Court ruling, and let's just, I'll give you a wide-open reaction question. It looks like you're reaching for your coffee there, David, so I'll start with John Smart. Your reaction to yesterday's ruling from the Supreme Court?
I'm pleased.
John, am I hearing the radio in the background there, or is that something?
Yeah, hold on a second.
Okay, all right.
I'm trying to get that off.
All right. David, we'll start with you then. The Supreme Court deal.
Well, it's, I think Americans are going to take Nancy Pelosi's advice, and I think we're all busy trying to find out what's in that law that they passed. I know a lot of my conservative colleagues are very disappointed in Chief Justice John Roberts, but at least he threw this back into the political sphere, which is really where it belongs. And, you know, I go back to Roe versus Wade. That was something that needed to be decided in the political sphere by the people and their elected representatives, not by a court. And there's a poster out there that said, yesterday the court voted, in November the people are going to vote. So this is going to be an issue, and as it should be, it'll be hashed out by the people.
That said, would you have been disappointed if the court overturned Obamacare?
No, I wouldn't have been. I thought it was a little bit of a strange ruling in that supposedly it was not mandated commerce, which would be a violation of the Constitution. Instead, it was a tax on people who didn't buy health insurance. I mean, that's what it came down to. So you're going to hear Republicans say it is a tax, and we said it was a tax all along. President Obama is on record saying it's not a tax. The court has now ruled it's a tax.
John Smart, now your reaction. Were you happy to see that ruling yesterday?
Yes, I was very happy to see the ruling. And I can understand the other side being somewhat confused about it, because I don't think the explanation was very clear. But I'm very happy that it was upheld.
And as David Blaska said, it now heads to the political sphere. John Smart, first, is this going to be a big issue in the presidential race?
Well, I think it's bound to be a big issue in the presidential race. And it's a question of the president and the Democratic Party making sure that the case is well explained to everybody.
And David, are people going to vote based on this?
I think they are. It's an interesting thing that this... Obamacare, I think he's embraced that term, so I don't feel like I'm being deprecating the...
Except that, David, he says Obama's care.
Oh, well, that's fine.
And not Obama's scare. Let's get that S in the right
Thank
syllable.
Thank you. I said Obamacare. And, we've seen that 47% of Americans opposed the health care law, just 33% supported, according to an AP poll. Rasmussen came out and said 54% of likely voters want the law repealed. New York Times CBS poll said two-thirds either wanted the individual mandate or the entire law to be found unconstitutional. The president understands that it is unpopular. My problem, though, Rob and John, he's sitting here, I'm sure, John, you're going to be pleased with my conundrum here, is I think we're going to elect Mitt Romney as president. I'm not sure we can get to 60 senators, which I think it would take to overturn this thing.
John Smart, your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think it's going to be overturned. I don't think anybody's going to be able to overturn it. In this case, the court has decided that it basically is constitutional, and that was the big shot, and it didn't happen.
Well, there's. I have to understand that one of the really sea changes in American political life occurred with the passage of this Affordable Health Care Act in, what was it, 2009. That gave rise to the Tea Party. The Tea Party has been energized. You know, we have a great debate in this country, John, and it's, you have to, first of all, have great faith in the federal government, that the federal government can manage one-fifth of the nation's economy and can do so while providing efficiencies. That hasn't happened, and look at the Postal Service, to be honest about it. And the other factor is nothing is free. Someone is going to pay for this. This is another redistribution scheme. We have a lot of Americans who are tired of supporting folks who maybe aren't putting their shoulder to the plow as much as they need to. And we're going down the road of Greece here, John.
John Smart, do you think this is an overreach? Is the federal government taking too active a role in this important part of the economy?
No, I do not think so. In fact, I think that if you take a look at other countries of the world, not necessarily Greece, as David would like us to look at, but at other countries that have significant public health care programs, it's actually an economic boon to them. And I think that's exactly the direction that we're going.
Cuba, Italy, Spain, Portugal, name your country.
I was
thinking more in terms of Sweden, Norway.
Well, they're backing off too from that, you know, but that's fine.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are. They're reducing their social security net.
Well, but they're not dropping their national health care.
No, they're not. They're scaling back.
Let's get some calls in on the health care issue, and I've got a few more points to bring up if our callers don't. But Alex joins us now in Toma. Hi, Alex.
Hi, it's a pleasure to talk with you guys. I wanted to say I was very displeased with the Supreme Court ruling, and I think we can all agree that Obamacare has its pros and cons, but I think one thing that's being overlooked is this set the Supreme Court precedent that Congress has the right to tax inactivity. And, I mean, that begs the question, what is the limit to their power then? I mean, can they tax you for not owning a car or not owning a cell phone? So I think that's something that's really being overlooked, and I think it's rather terrifying.
John Smart, even if you agree that it's for a good cause, is this putting too much power in the hands of Congress?
Or is it putting too much power in the hands of the Supreme Court? I don't know. I don't think so. That's the way our government is set up.
David, do you share Alex's concern?
Well, I do. And that's why we have elections. I mean, I stated at the outset that I always thought it was a rather close call constitutionally as to whether this would be overturned. And as a conservative who still rues how a major societal issue is taken out of the public sphere, and I'm talking about abortion, I'm talking about Roe versus Wade, this has been put back into the political sphere. The people will decide. This will be hashed out in the political arena as it should be. You know, the Democrats had a sweep, in 2008, and it had two good election cycles. They had another previous one in 2006 in the congressional elections. Republicans have, run the board since, especially here in Wisconsin. So, we're finding there's a Gallup poll that says two-thirds of Americans consider that big government is the biggest threat to this country, more than big business, which is cited by 26%, or big labor, which was cited by 8%. You know, we here in Wisconsin had a tremendous education over this whole recall period about the proper role of government. And I think we're much wiser, and we can make these decisions for ourselves. So it'll be hashed out in the political arena.
John Smart?
I think it's very interesting because the arguments, or whatever they are, that David brings up are basically the same ones that came up at the time that Social Security was passed back in 1935. And I think that we're basically reliving the same thing all over again with people who are arguing against the decision.
And do you think that over time, assuming that this law isn't overturned?
I know that over time this will become part of the fabric of American life, as it's intended to be. And it's also entirely possible and probable that it will be tinkered with, and it will be perfected the same way that Social Security was when it first came out, and that's likely to happen.
Well, let me just say, Rob, that Social Security is a forced savings plan. You don't get anything more out of that than you put in for a retiree. But
not true.
Well, okay, all right.
Well, but Dave, let me ask you this: assuming that Republicans don't have the majority they need to overturn this, do you see, as John mentioned, do you see Republicans and Democrats being able to work together to make changes to the existing Affordable Care Act? That might improve things to the satisfaction of both sides?
Well, if you don't have a majority, in the case of the Senate, you need a supermajority to avoid to have cloture and avoid a filibuster, which everyone, by the way, everybody bemoans filibusters until they're on the losing or minority side. Yeah, I think there'll be some tweaking to it. I don't know to what extent you can also have executive indifference to it as well. You know, the whole thing is these problems, there's always a lot of unintended consequences. This is an enormously complicated act, much more complicated than Social Security. There's a reason why it's 2,700 pages. One of the justices said, you know, this making me read this is cruel and unusual punishment. So, and we've hired a phalanx of bureaucrats to run this program. If that doesn't give even John Smart a little bit of pause, it should.
Does it give you pause, John Smart?
No, it doesn't. No, I don't understand exactly what he's talking about. For that matter, the same thing happened again with Social Security. It also required a whole separate department of the government in order to pull it off. And it made sense from the beginning, and it still makes sense today. And again, Social Security is an insurance plan. It's not a government payout. It means that you put money into it, yes, but if you put money into it only for 2 years and you die, obviously the Social Security benefits derive to your spouse. So the same thing is going to happen with this program, and I don't see that there's a problem with it.
Back to the phones now with Lisa in Eau Claire. Hi, Lisa.
Hello. Yes, my question is, if the Obamacare heads up to go ahead, will there be any laws that will regulate people's weight, meaning you have to be a certain weight in order to receive affordable health care?
So a certain weight, you're saying?
Oh,
so
yes.
Can it impose health standards before you can join in?
And also the consumption of broccoli. Now, according to Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, it can't make you buy broccoli, but it can tax you if you don't buy broccoli.
No, wait. Can I invoke the Supreme Court to get my kids to eat broccoli is what I want to know.
I think you could. You could lay down the law. And yes, I think you could.
Well,
But the lady's question is very good. I mean, we're seeing Mayor Bloomberg.
President Bush 1 was tried to do that, remember?
Oh, he didn't like broccoli.
He didn't like the broccoli, as I recall,
no.
Yeah. But John Smart, do you see, is there the risk of, I guess, a too intrusive a government watchdog over our health now with this law in place?
No.
Okay. We'll move on. Simple
well,
answer?
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones now. Dennis in Beloit. Hi, Dennis.
Yes, thank you for your program. I appreciate the comments by both of your guests. My question is the reluctance of Governor Walker to set up insurance exchanges. I've talked to several small business people who would want those exchanges set up, and I'm concerned that that approach will actually stifle economic growth, and we need jobs, as we all can agree. And even Attorney General Van Hollen made remarks that seemed to be a bit in opposition to Governor Walker's approach. But my concern is that failure to establish exchanges sends a message of confusion, and it will not enhance job creation that we desperately need in Wisconsin. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, Governor Walker has said he's going to hold off on implementing those exchanges at least till after the election,
right,
and seeing if it's going to be overturned. David, should he get the ball rolling on this?
Well, I think it's prudent to see what the November election will bring. And, you know, it's only, what is it now, less than 5 months, I think, away. So I think that's prudent. You know, he, I should just mention, too, that the governor has gone a long way toward enabling health savings accounts, which probably is the better approach. But we'll see what happens, you know, in the election.
And John Smart, what do you think of Governor Walker saying he's going to hold off on implementing these health care exchanges under the new health care law?
Well,
newly approved health care law.
I'm not terribly surprised, and I think it's very interesting that his own Attorney General, J.B. Van Hollen, is trying to turn that around and saying you have to comply with federal law. Interesting.
Well, he did say, though, that there's a very generous window here to do so, and that's what the governor is availing himself of.
Another caller now, Ned in Mosinee, on the health care issue. Hi, Ned.
Yes, my question is, first, states choose whether they would like to do the expansion of Medicaid on a state-by-state basis. Why should our state choose to refuse federal dollars for implementing the law as it stands, and it is the law, and other states nearby and across the country receive 100% of the costs initially, and years from now, about 90% of the costs that are incurred. And, it's just illogical for us to turn the money down when other states are accepting it, and our state is near the bottom of the list as it is, in return of federal dollars to our state.
Ned, thanks for the call. Now, there's an interesting issue there in the Supreme Court ruling, too. It says the federal government can't use Medicaid money as a stick. They can't say, if you don't participate, we're taking all your Medicaid money away. They can use it as a carrot. They could say, if you implement it, here's some extra Medicaid money to help you out. Your thoughts on what Ned had to say and that part of the Supreme Court ruling, David?
Well, you know, that's another wrinkle in this thing that needs to be ironed out a little bit. We do have Badger Care here, which covers, I think, roughly around 700,000 folks already. So, and we've been a leader in that. I think that program was established by Governor Thompson. I'll defer to John on this, but I think part of it is, these mandates, and I think the caller is correct in pointing out that after a while the federal contribution drops. So, you know, it's one of those, and we've seen this from the federal government before. They'll get you started on a program, then they back out, and then you've got the cost.
John Smart, your thoughts on that part of the Supreme Court ruling or what Ned had to say?
As I understand it, Badger Care and Senior Care will both be covered under Wisconsin's plan, and I don't see any dropping off of funding based on that. We're already in compliance with the whole idea of the new law. And I don't see that they're likely to drop it.
One last note on the health care issue before we move on. Bill Martins, the producer, handed me a note saying that Mitt Romney has already raised, where'd that go, $4.2 million in a fundraising appeal based on the Supreme Court's health care ruling.
Yeah, just within hours, the money started pouring
in. Does this mean something, David Blaska?
Well, you know, I mean, I cited three different public opinion polls. There is a party that wants to grow government and will never be satisfied, by the way. And there's a party that says, you know, we've got a government that's pretty darn big already and controls so much of our lives. That's the argument that we're having. It's a great argument to have. And again, I say it's an argument that should be in the political public sphere, and now it is.
And John Smart, are you worried that Mitt Romney is raising a whole bucket load of money based on this ruling?
Well, it just means that he doesn't have to use any of his own billions that are stored away in Cayman Islands in Switzerland to fund his campaign, that's all.
Talking to John Smart and David Blaska on this edition of The Week in Review, we're going to move on from the health care ruling now, upcoming issues, contempt vote in the House against Attorney General Eric Holder, some other Supreme Court rulings from earlier in the week, some state news, job numbers, that sort of thing. It's all coming up on The Week in Review. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're done talking about health care for now, but next Tuesday at 7, we'll talk about it some more with Karen Timberlake. She's former health secretary here in Wisconsin. And we also have an invitation out to Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen. Hope that'll work out. If not then, sometime soon after. They'll be with Joy Cardine, who's going to be back in this seat next week. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy. This is our Week in Review segment with David Blaska and John Smart. David Blaska here in the studio with a very bright shirt. John Smart joining us by phone. Our next issue, a vote in the House to hold Attorney General Eric Holder in contempt. It's kind of a long, complicated story, the short version. It comes from this fast and furious operation. Ultimately, it let some guns fall into the hands of drug dealers in Mexico, one of which was used to kill a U.S. border agent. It's ended up being a clash between congressional Republicans and the White House over documents pertaining to that. The White House says, hey, we've shared some documents and we've shared all we can. House investigators say, no, we need a lot more and you're stonewalling this, and finally led to a vote yesterday. The House voted to hold the Attorney General in contempt. Republicans voting for it, a few Democrats joining them, a bunch of Democrats abstaining in protest. John Smart, is this an issue that you've been following? Is this a big deal, or is this a partisan fishing expedition, as some people have said?
Well, it's a partisan fishing expedition, to be sure. But interesting that yesterday, the Democrats didn't just disappear. They walked outside, and they had a press conference out on the lawn of the Capitol building. And yeah, the whole thing is preposterous to begin with. No question about it. Daryl Issa is the chairman of that committee, and he's gone far and above and beyond what the calls of his responsibility are in attacking the Attorney General. It's silly.
Well, aside from the particulars of the issue, is there a basic transparency issue? Don't we want the White House, whether it's a President Bush, President Obama, maybe a President Romney, to provide more rather than less, more rather than fewer documents for congressional oversight?
Yes, of course, and I can understand that, except that there are certain things that apparently, and I don't know the details any more than anybody else does, there were things that were considered to be top secret, and the president knew about that, and he asked for presidential, holdback, and I think that should be happening.
David Blaska?
Well, yeah, I think we have a new attorney general. It's Eric Withholder.
Hi-o.
Yay. Be sure to tip the waitress. you know, it's interesting to hear. I mean, I just love it. It's to hear our liberal friends here like John defending executive privilege. It's, I guess, the worm's turn, so to speak. Rob, I don't believe that that Eric Holder or the Obama administration purposely ran guns through the cartels in Mexico. But if you read, and there's a great expose in Fortune magazine about this, I think the Congress would like to have as much information as Fortune magazine got, at least to the ability that, to the extent that Fortune magazine was able to get that information. Who knows if it's the real story or not? We don't have all the documents. But clearly from that article, it's clear that that was one botched operation. The prosecutors were not coordinating with the agents on the ground, and so guns were run, and a Border Patrol agent was murdered with one of those guns.
Get two pieces of listener feedback here. Taylor on Facebook writes, Holder should be held in contempt. I also think that by President Obama granting executive privilege, that Obama knows something about this and should be investigated as well. And then Glenn in Cedarburg joins us on the phone. Hi, Glenn.
Hello. I was just listening to your conservative friend for this Week in Review. I'd remind him that George W. Bush invoked executive privilege 6 times during his term. This is President Obama's first time he's invoked it. And this Fast and Furious program started under the Bush administration. The Obama administration stupidly continued it. It's a botched operation, nothing more. There's really no cover-up going on except just a bad policy. And I realize he may have said the position I've heard spun on the right that Fast and Furious was somehow some backdoor prelude to the Obama administration introducing gun control legislation is utterly ridiculous.
Thanks for the comments, Taylor and Glenn. David Blaska, is this an issue we're going to be talking about in a couple months, or is this going to be a passing fancy?
I don't think it's registering terribly, but I do. It is a big issue with the National Rifle Association, and I'm a member of the NRA. I mean, I get my back up a little bit when folks say, "Oh, they're listening to the NRA." They're listening to the membership of the NRA. I happen to agree with the caller. I don't believe it was a way to discredit firearms and to get more restrictions. On the other hand, there's no question in my mind that the Democratic Party, as a party, wants to restrict guns. We had Wisconsin was the last state until second last state to adopt concealed carry. Governor Jim Doyle kept vetoing and vetoing and vetoing. So there is that suspicion, and unfortunately, it's been earned by our friends on the left.
John Smart, is this an issue we're going to keep talking about, or will this be one of our last mentions of it, do you think?
No, I don't think we're going to keep talking about it, and I think your last caller, Taylor, had it right on the head. This is preposterous. This is not really the issue at all. And there's nobody that ever says that the Attorney General doesn't have some secrets that should be kept secret. And I could understand that. That's what the president was saying. The president was saying, I know all about this, and therefore would like to stop it. That's not what he said. He said this is information that is privileged and not necessarily for public view. And we all know that if you give something to the Congress, it turns up in the papers the next day because there's nobody there that can keep a secret. And it's necessary that we do that if we're dealing with this kind of a question.
Move on now to another issue from the Supreme Court. Healthcare is not all they released this week. On Monday, they gave out their ruling on Arizona's immigration law. Struck down a lot of it, upheld, at least for now, a provision that requires police officers to check immigration status of people they suspect might be in the country illegally. But they took out a lot of the enforcement of that policy that was kind of controversial, and there was a similar effort here in Wisconsin that hasn't passed yet, but it could be brought back. John Smart, were you glad to see this ruling?
I was not surprised, let's put it that way, because I think that line in Arizona begged to be thrown out. There's no question about it.
David Blaska?
Well, the federal government has its powers, and it has its sphere of influence, and that's appropriate under the Constitution. By the way, I just want to give a shout-out here to John Roberts. All the folks, I was watching MSNBC, some of their comedy variety hour shows, and on Wednesday night, and they were all just ripping on the court. Now I think they may have changed their tune, just as John and his friends don't want more sunlight as disinfected into government. They say that there's lots of secrets and they should be keeping them. I will say this about the part of the law that was upheld was that the county sheriff or city patrolman in Arizona may cooperate with ICE, the immigration, whatever it is, ICE, enforcement. And that is what our sheriff in Dane County here in Madison has been doing. He's a Democrat. I would hope that the law enforcement agencies would cooperate with each other and talk to each other and say, we've picked up this guy for, going 90 miles an hour in a school zone. And we believe that this fellow here, he doesn't seem to have the proper identification, is an illegal immigrant. I would hope that the agencies would cooperate, and I would hope that John would agree with that.
Do you agree with that, John Smart?
No, not necessarily. I don't, as a matter of fact. And the court was very clear that the one escape hatch that they left in the bill was intended to be very carefully watched, and it will be, I'm sure. And I have no doubt that it will be also overturned eventually.
Another case that I know both of you will have an interest in, the Supreme Court overturned a Montana ban on corporate political money. This is kind of a follow-up to their previous ruling on the Citizens United case when the court ruled that corporate money is speech, so corporations can spend what they want on elections. So this upholds Citizens United and applies it now more directly at the state level. David Blaska, this is an issue I know you write a lot about on your blog.
It is, and it ought to concern everybody in journalism, everybody who wants who values free speech. And I think, you know, in this day and age, everyone's a journalist. One of the few people here, I'm one of many people who has a blog. I think everybody and their uncle has a blog these days, but they Facebook and they whatnot. Speech is they were not going to allow a state to circumvent a federal ruling, and the ruling was very clear that people have First Amendment speech rights, whether they belong to a union or to the Democratic Party, or if they have invested their money and are members of a corporation. All of these have voices, and we can't selectively choose which voice we don't want to hear. And I hope that John would agree with that.
John, do you think that, in this case, corporate money is protected as free speech?
No. And as a matter of fact, I think it's very concerning to all of us, it should be, that law in Montana that was overthrown was 100 years old, and it was meant to deal with corruption in the state of Montana, and the people who had the money were the ones who were running everything, and that's exactly what we have to try to avoid. And I can understand the court's decision in this case.
David Blaska, this was part of progressive era reforms they were worried about at the time. You had these big, sure, everything from the railroad companies to agricultural combines, this and that, with a lot of influence over politics. And
right,
a lot of people, especially on the left, are worried that we're going back to that. Should we be worried?
Well, let's understand about, you know, here in Wisconsin, the word progressive has, you know, it's a hallowed. I mean, I expect to hear angelic choirs, you know, and progressive cue the producer here. The progressive movement was also responsible for prohibition. So, but going back to this law, you know, you go back to, I don't know, 1910 Montana, and you had a newspaper, which is probably owned by the mine owner. Now, what do you have? You have the same newspaper, probably, a monopoly, but you've got many talk radio stations. You've got internet. You've got the Huffington Post. You've got Blaska's blog, Bring It blog, by the way, on ibwisconsin.com. You've got so many citizen voices. That is one of the things that overturned communism, was the people found a way now that to communicate those the gatekeepers, the so-called gatekeepers of communication, were swept aside. People get information. People are intelligent. And they can decide for themselves. I think the people of Wisconsin and of Montana can sift and winnow the truth for themselves.
John Smart, I have read your posts on fightingbob.com. You are worried about too much corporate influence, too much corporate money affecting elections. Make your case.
Absolutely. And I think that's exactly the case in the Montana law. The reason the Montana law was in place was because of corporate money controlling everything, and I think we have to get away from that. I'm baffled by what David's talking about here. I just don't understand it at all.
Rob Ferret here, filling in for Joy Cardine. We have David Blaska and John Smart on this edition of The Week in Review. We'll move on to some topics in state politics now. Governor Walker on the national stage, job numbers in Wisconsin, and of course, you've been waiting for it, The Week in Review quiz. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy Cardine for another 15 minutes here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joy will be back on Monday, and at this time on Monday, it's time for Mondays with Mike. Not Mike Crane this time, but Mike Arnold, our content director at Wisconsin Public Radio. Find out what goes on behind the scenes, what special programming is coming up, just what's going on here at Wisconsin Public Radio, Monday at this time. This hour, it's The Week in Review, looking at the top state and national news stories of the week. My guests are David Blaska. He's a former Dane County supervisor. You can find his Bring It blog at the In Business Wisconsin website. John Smart is with us, former chair of the Price County Democratic Party. You can see what he writes at fightingbob.com. Time now for the Week in Review quiz. Hollywood director David Zucker is slated to direct another Wisconsin tourism commercial. He's a UW-Madison alum. He's commissioned actor Robert Hayes to be in the ad. The two last worked together in 1980 for a famous spoof movie Quiet, David Blaska, and John Smart. What is the name of that movie? Call in with your answer. This one's too easy. Call in with your answer at 800-642-1234. Maybe not. 800-642-1234. You can also email your answer to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org.
Rob, do you like gladiator movies?
Do I like gladiator movies? I quote. Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit eating donuts.
Yeah.
All right, we're giving too many clues here. Back to the issues of the week. Some speculation in the newspaper, not speculation, actually. Governor Walker has said he wants to play a bigger role in the national elections. He's put himself out there to Mitt Romney. He says, hey, tell me where you need me. In effect, I will go to other states, make the case for you. John Smart, this was an issue in the recall. Tom Barrett accusing Governor Walker of being a rock star for the Republicans. Doesn't look like Governor Walker has a problem with it. He'd be happy to be a rock star. What do you think about that?
Before I do that, I would like to say, Rob, that I've been listening to you all week, and you're doing a wonderful job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Anyone you walk away from is a good one, I always say.
As far as whether or not Scott Walker has some kind of a plan beyond his governorship, it would be fine with me if he left the state and went to campaign with Mitt Romney. I think that's just fine. They can both lose, and we can get rid of both of them at the same time.
Do you think that he is somebody who will bring swing voters on a Mitt Romney side around the country? Or is his role going to be more to raise money from supporters? I'll ask you that, John Smart, and then let David Blaska chime in.
I don't think he's going to make any difference whatsoever, actually, except that I think that there are a lot of Republicans who think that he is some kind of a hero because of the fact that he has flouted Wisconsin's tradition in order to accomplish his goals. And if he ends up on the presidential ticket, I think that's just great, because then we can simply get rid of him and find somebody to replace him.
David Blaska, a lot of Republicans do look at Governor Walker around the nation as a hero.
I want to thank John Smart, Marty Beal, Mary Bell, Tom Barrett, Kathleen Falk for making Scott Walker the rock star that he is today. He would not be there. I mean, if it wasn't for the concerted effort of our liberal and progressive friends to launch him, the man was steadfast. He never spoke an evil word. He never lost his temper through all the siege of the Capitol, through all the imprecations. You had Tom Barrett saying he was lying about the job numbers. They just came out. He's off by 16. You know, what they put that family through was the disgrace. And he stood steadfast. That's what the American people want. They want someone with courage. Courage was on the ballot. Frankly, a lot of us think Mitt Romney needs to be a little more courageous. It needs a little more Paul Ryan and Scott Walker in his veins, a little more calcium in his bones. And Scott Walker is he is golden, I'll tell you that. He is a model for the United States of America. If we want to, you know, and just, Rob, let me, one other thing. We're talking about health care. You know what the greatest health care bill would be? Jobs. A healthy economy, people working, they would have health insurance, or they could pay for it out of their salaries. If you have people working, you will have a healthy economy. You'll have all the wonderful things. You'll have recreation and parks and bike paths and the whole bit.
We'll talk about jobs, the job numbers you mentioned in just a minute.
You're suggesting that we get rid of Mr. Bush's recession?
After a while, John, you got to start owning it. Here, you're coming on 4 years now, and I blame Bush is wearing pretty thin. If your candidate comes out there and says I blame Bush one more time, I'll tell you he'll be booed off the stage, and I hope he doesn't take 45 minutes to do it.
We'll get into job numbers in just a minute, but one more item, Governor Walker. Something we in the media love to do is speculate about who will run in future presidential races, and there's speculation turning to Scott Walker. One of those moments where he was asked if he'd run and he didn't rule it out. So do you think he'd make, supposing, especially if Mitt Romney doesn't win this year, is Scott Walker, David Blaska first, is Scott Walker a viable candidate, vice president, president in 2016?
Absolutely. He has something special. I remember reading about Joe Kennedy. He finally realized that his son John had the goods. He said he has the goods. And this man has the goods. He is able to speak succinctly and to the point. You know, he'll give you a little wink. He doesn't flinch. He doesn't put a wetted finger in the air to see which way is that the winds are blowing. tremendous amount of courage. I think, you know, when you think about courage, you think about people like Winston Churchill. You think of, you know, Kennedy's book, Profiles in Courage. This man is a profile in courage.
John Smart, Governor Walker as a possible national candidate in the future. What do you think?
Comparing him to Winston Churchill and John F. Kennedy? No, I don't think so. He may have some kind of a future in the Republican Party because they're as off base as he is. But I just don't see that it's going to make much sense.
Well, it's off base, but, you know, the people of America, Wisconsin voted for him twice within 2 years. So,
Rob Ferret talking to John Smart and David Blaska about the news of the week in review. We'll turn now to those jobs numbers we just mentioned. So job numbers came out from the federal government. They, as David mentioned, confirmed the job numbers that Governor Walker had released ahead of schedule. But there was some controversy. Oh, these aren't the confirmed numbers. The confirmed numbers are pretty close. That's the good news, I guess, for Governor Walker. The bad news is they put us among the lowest job creation states in the Midwest and the bottom, I think we're tied for eighth lowest in the country. So kind of mixed news there. John Smart, your reaction to that job report?
No surprise. I think we all knew that. You know, that it was going to end up that way. It might be the numbers that Scott Walker was talking about, but it still puts us at the bottom of the barrel.
Do you, John Smart, before I let David Blaska jump in, Governor Walker this week again said, hey, recall's sorted out now. The uncertainty over who's going to be the governor if Act 10, the budget repair bill, is going to stand, that uncertainty is over. Businesses are going to start hiring now. Do you buy that?
No. simply don't.
David Blaska, do you buy
it? I don't think that Act 10 is going to stand. I think that in November we're going to change the legislature, and that's going to make the difference.
Oh, boy. You must be growing some good stuff up there in Price County. I want some of that.
You don't think the legislature will flip in the fall?
No, the Assembly is going to remain Republican. The Senate is going to go probably, and you heard it here first, probably 1914 Republican, and this certainly 1815. It will do that. And Governor Walker will still be governor. There will be no way that you're going to repeal Act 10. I mean, it's pipe dreams to say that Governor Walker is going to sign, even if you had a Democratic legislature, is going to sign a bill that will repeal Act 10 after all he's gone through. John, it's just not going to happen. And it's disingenuous, and I think you're disserving yourself and the people who listen to you by even suggesting that.
Do you see a real prospect that Act 10 will be turned around in this year and 2 years, John?
Yes, I do. But then it's just a question of political swinging. It tends to go from one point to the other, back and forth and back and forth, and I think that's going to happen again.
We'll move now to the U.S. Senate race. Of course, we've got a four-candidate race on the Republican side. Tammy Baldwin's the only major candidate on the Democratic side. New thing popped up in my inbox that I haven't seen in a few months. Used to be I'd get email from the National Club for Growth daily targeting Tommy Thompson as a moderate. Well, with the health care ruling, they came out again saying, hey, Tommy Thompson's a moderate. He supported the health care bill, the individual mandate. Tommy Thompson's campaign denies that. Is this going to be a big issue in the race, David Blaska, the argument over whether Tommy Thompson is conservative enough for today's Wisconsin Republican Party?
Well, that's about the only case that some of them have to make, especially, I think, Mark Newman, who can be an attractive candidate in many ways, but he's just left so many bodies, you know, injured and along the way here, including in the governor's race less than 2 years ago. Didn't make any friends. First of all, Tommy Thompson testified before the Senate Committee on Finance on May 6, 2008, against an individual mandate. I mean, that's on the record. And the factcheck.org organization has debunked that whole line. I think people will see through this. Tommy Thompson will. But they are, you know, they're attacking him because clearly he is the front runner. And the Marquette University poll, which was so spot on with the recall, has Tommy up, really the only candidate who can beat Tammy Baldwin. I think as Wisconsin learns more about Tammy Baldwin and her role in the siege of the Capitol, that margin will only increase.
John Smart, Tommy Thompson. First, the issue of is Tommy Thompson too moderate for today's Republican Party?
Well, actually, yes, I think he probably is. and it's not wouldn't be the first time. Tommy Thompson has a record that Republicans ought to stand on, but they're not. The same thing happened to Richard Lugar in Indiana, and the same thing happened to that senator out in Utah, and it's going to be happening to a lot more Republicans because they're not quite right enough for the current state of the party. I love it when Republicans talk about the party of Lincoln as if Abraham Lincoln would be allowed into the Republican Party today. I don't think he would. And a whole lot of other people, too. Teddy Roosevelt comes to mind. No, I don't think so. And I think that Tammy Baldwin is a superb candidate. I can't imagine a better candidate than Tammy. She's a remarkable representative. She has been in Congress, as she was before in the state legislature. And I think that she will win.
You guys reminded me of another story I wanted to get your quick thoughts on. Senator Orrin Hatch staved off a challenge from the right in a primary in Utah. A few months ago, people thought he was in danger. Now he survived it. Is that good news for incumbents or, say, an established Republican like Tommy Thompson, David?
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a you-know-what if it's good for Republicans or not. The voters will decide. Too many Republicans have been Democrat-light where they want, we'll say we want the same thing, but only less of it and a little bit later. You want to double the size of the government, how about just a 50% increase for now and then later on? That kind of stuff doesn't pass muster anymore. And we see with the health care bill, which gave rise to the Tea Party, which, of course, the fighting Bob people and Nancy Pelosi said was nothing but AstroTurf. Well, that's that AstroTurf votes, and they swept the House and came close to taking the Senate last time. I think we're going to take the Senate. As I said before, I don't know if we're going to get to 60. But and look what happened in Wisconsin.
Quick thoughts on Orrin Hatch, John Smart.
I'm surprised that Orrin Hatch succeeded in overcoming his primary opponents. But maybe things are changing. And maybe the people that were being put in place before are no longer in that kind of a position. It's entirely possible that the right-wing slant that happened in the 2010 election is now about to be corrected, and that would be fine as far as I'm concerned. That means that moderates like Orrin Hatch or whoever else can still find a place in the Republican Party.
Time now
and
for...
As I said before, people like Lincoln and Teddy Roosevelt probably wouldn't be accepted anymore. And the way they were going after Tommy Thompson made it sound like he was not nearly right enough for most of the people in the party.
Time now for an answer to this week's Week in Review quiz question. Our winner is Don in Deerfield. Congratulations. We're wondering about the movie that David Zucker and Robert Hayes worked on. They are making a new tourism commercial for Wisconsin. Here's a clip from that movie.
What flying experience have you had?
Oh, I flew single-engine fighters in the Air Force, but this plane has four engines. It's an entirely different kind of flying altogether.
It's an entirely different kind of flying.
It's an entirely different kind of flying and airplane. That was from the movie Airplane. David Blaska, you're a fan. You're already dropping quotes.
Yes. It's don't eat the fish.
And John Smart, was that a favorite movie of yours?
No, actually not.
Not a fan. Okay. Thanks to both John Smart and David Blaska for joining us on this edition of The Week in Review. Thank you for your calls, your questions. Thanks to Bill Martins, Amanda Magnus, and Naya Mukherjee for producing programs today and all week. Joy Cardine returns to the chair next Monday. It'd be good to have her back. I'm Rob Ferret. I filled in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network.